Some of the most important moments in Jewish history were achieved through bold statesmanship and diplomacy. But others involved the seizing of random moments that suddenly presented themselves. In the story we are telling today, all we know for sure is that Caligula attempted to desecrate the temple, and because of Agrippa, this did not occur. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 79, Caligula versus the Temple. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. What is history? Is it a series of considered decisions by statesmen, tales of deliberate diplomacy, and of the overseeing of the waging of war? Or is it a series of seemingly contingent events that can be understood as happenstance, or, instead, from the perspective of faith, providence? The truth is that history is both statesmanship and events. We are, for example, of course, grateful that Churchill led Britain in its darkest and most dangerous hour. But we also recognize that, as historians note, history could have been very different had the injuries suffered by Churchill years earlier when he was struck by a car on Fifth Avenue been more severe. We are grateful that the Union won the Battle of Gettysburg, and there are heroes in that story who helped ensure victory, like Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain at the Battle of Little Round Top. But, as historians also note, had it not been for the seeming happenstance in which Stonewall Jackson was killed earlier through friendly fire, Lee might well have won with his most talented general at his disposal. History is a combination of deliberate decisions and seemingly small events that have enormous consequences. And this is reflected in two rival versions of a story in which one of the most maniacal of Roman emperors was pitted against the sacred city of Jerusalem. The stories that surround the man named Gaius Julius Caesar Augustus Germanicus, more popularly known as Caligula, are truly astounding. Most famously, aside from the rumor of him appointing his horse as a consul of Rome, there was the episode of him throwing members of the audience to the animals at a form of gladiatorial games. Or as the historian Cassius Dio put it, Caligula chose, quote, when there was a shortage of condemned criminals to be given to the wild beasts, to order that some of the mob standing near the benches should be seized and thrown to them, and to prevent the possibility of their making an outcry or uttering any reproaches, he first caused their tongues to be cut out, end quote. Whether or not this is accurate, what is certain is that upon rising to the throne following the death of the emperor Tiberius, Caligula declared himself a god. And some historians, such as the Jewish philosopher Philo of Alexandria, describe how Caligula would dress up as various members of the Roman pantheon of divinities. Becoming emperor in the year 37, it was soon after that Caligula turned his sights to the one place that refused to worship him, ordering the Roman governor in the Middle East to place a statue of the emperor inside the temple in Jerusalem. Knowing how this would cause Jerusalem to explode in violence, the Roman governor took his time in constructing the statue, and ultimately the decree was lifted, thanks to the intervention of Caligula's friend, the grandson of both Herod and his Hasmonean wife Mariam, Herod Agrippa I. Agrippa, who had spent much of his childhood in Rome, had just been named the king of Judea by Caligula, and we will tell much of his complex story beginning tomorrow. For now, we must ask, what was this intervention that prevented the placing of a statue of Caligula in the temple in Jerusalem? In the account of the Jewish philosopher Philo of Alexandria, who was apparently in Rome when this unfolded, Caligula, or Gaius as he was also known, described his order to Agrippa, sarcastically saying to him, quote, your loyal and excellent fellow citizens, the only nation of men upon the whole face of the earth by whom Gaius is not esteemed to be a god, appear now to be even desiring to plot my death in their obstinate disobedience. For when I commanded my statue in the character of Jupiter to be erected in their temple, they raised the whole of their people and quitted the city and the whole country in a body under pretense of addressing a petition to me, but in reality, being determined to act in a manner contrary to the commands which I had imposed upon them, end quote. At the news of this decree, according to Philo, Agrippa, no doubt knowing how the placing of a statue in the temple would bring total war to Judea, collapsed into a coma, which, according to Philo, only made Caligula more determined, saying, quote, if Agrippa, who is my most intimate and dearest friend, and one bound to me by so many benefits, is so completely under the influence of his national customs that he cannot bear even to hear a word against them, but faints away to such a degree as to be near dying, what must one expect will be the feelings of others who have no motive or influence to draw them the other way? End quote. Philo further reports that when Agrippa awoke, he composed himself and then composed a letter to the emperor, a text that is too long to fully recite here, but one whose fascinating eloquence combined with diplomacy deserves careful study. Here is one passage wherein Agrippa, as a descendant not only of Herod but of the Maccabees, speaks of his heritage. Quote, "And I am, as you know, a Jew, and Jerusalem is my country, in which there is erected the holy temple of the Most High God. And I have kings for my grandfathers and for my ancestors, the greater part of whom have been called high priests, looking upon their royal power as inferior to their office as priests, and thinking that the high priesthood is as much superior to the power of a king as God is superior to man, for that the one is occupied in rendering service to God, and the other has only the care of governing them. Accordingly, I, being one of this nation, and being attached to this country and to such a temple, address to you this petition on behalf of them all, on behalf of the nation, that it may not be looked upon by you in a light contrary to the true one, since it is a most pious and holy nation, and one from the beginning most loyally disposed to your family." End quote. Agrippa then went on to explain what the placing of an idol in the temple would mean for Judea and Jerusalem. Quote, "O my lord and master Gaius, this temple has never, from the time of its original foundation until now, admitted any form made by hands, because it has been the abode of God. Now pictures and images are only imitations of those gods who are perceptible to the outward senses, but it was not considered by our ancestors to be consistent with the reverence due to God to make any image or representation to the invisible God." End quote. Agrippa further wrote in Philo's account how even the high priest could not enter the most holy parts of the temple except on Yom Kippur, and concluded, quote, "How many deaths, then, do you not suppose that the people who have been taught to regard this place with such holy reverence would willingly endure rather than see a statue introduced into it?" End quote. According to Philo, Caligula withdrew his decree, persuaded by the finesse and eloquence of this Jewish leader. This, then, is a striking episode involving a descendant of both Herod and the Maccabees. And while it is only one version of the story, we will see how in Agrippa there were sparks of Jewish pride. Whether or not he truly wrote this letter, its sentiments are indeed consonant with what we know of this individual. Yet, Josephus has a wholly other version of this story, wherein Agrippa is also the critical character in achieving the abolition of this idolatrous decree, but in which the diplomatic aspect is somewhat de-emphasized. Instead, the story centers on another aspect of life that is central to Judaism, eating. Agrippa, according to this Jewish historian, prepared for Caligula, again also known as Caius, the best meal he had ever had. Quote, "And when he once made him a supper and was careful to exceed all others both in expenses and in such preparations as might contribute most to his pleasure, nay, it was so far from the ability of others that Caius himself could never equal, much less exceed it. Such care had he taken before and to exceed all men, and particularly to make all agreeable to Caesar. Hereupon Caius admired his understanding and magnificence, that he should force himself to do all to please him, even beyond such expenses as he could bear, and was desirous not to be behind Agrippa in that generosity which he exerted in order to please him. So Caius, when he had drank wine plentifully and was merrier than ordinary, said thus during the feast when Agrippa had drunk to him, 'I knew before now how great a respect thou had for me, and how great kindness thou hast showed me, though with those hazards to thyself which thou underwentest under Tiberius on that account. Nor hast thou omitted anything to show thy goodwill towards us, even beyond thy ability, whence it would be a base thing for me to be conquered by thy affection. I am therefore desirous to make thee amends for everything in which I have been any way formerly deficient. For all I have bestowed on thee that may be called my gifts is but little. Everything that may contribute to thy happiness shall be at thy service, and that cheerfully, and so far as my ability will reach." End quote. In other words, having experienced the best meal of his life, the Emperor Caligula publicly promised Agrippa the Jewish prince that he would grant any request, thanks to this delicious dinner, assuming that Agrippa would ask for power or wealth. But Agrippa seized the moment, according to Josephus, and pleaded for the sacred city, saying, quote, "Since thou, O Lord, declarest such as thy readiness to grant, that I am worthy of thy gifts, I will ask nothing related to my own felicity, for what thou hast already bestowed on me has made me excel therein. But I desire somewhat which may make thee glorious for piety, and render the divinity assistant to thee in thy designs, and may be for an honor to me among those that inquire about it, as showing that I never once fail of obtaining what I desire of thee. For my petition is this, that thou wilt no longer think of the dedication of that statue which thou hast ordered to be set up in the Jewish temple." End quote. At this moment, surrounded by so many, and having publicly promised to grant whatever Agrippa requested, Caligula had no choice but to agree. In this version, it was seemingly a random slip of the tongue by Caligula that placed him in this position, rhetorically trapped, obligated to give in. And as Josephus further reflects, had Agrippa put forward his request without this promise by Caligula, he might well have ended up dead. Thus we have two different versions, Philo's and that of Josephus. One is a story of careful diplomacy, the other of a casual comment by an emperor that was seized upon by Agrippa. Which account is more accurate? I do not know, and I do not know if we can know. But together, these versions do embody history itself. Some of the most important moments in Jewish history were achieved through bold statesmanship and diplomacy, but others involved the seizing of random moments that suddenly presented themselves. Without the vision of Herzl, the Zionist movement would not have achieved the success that it did. But the success of Zionism can also, in certain periods, be traced to seemingly small moments, such as Louis Brandeis, at that point utterly assimilated with no connection to Zionism, being asked by Herzl's former secretary whether he, Brandeis, was related to a man named Louis Dembitz. This was Brandeis's beloved uncle and a dedicated Zionist. And with this, Brandeis's own Zionist journey began. We speak of the deliberate decision of Truman to support partition in 1947 and to recognize Israel in 1948, and rightly so. But those decisions may also be linked somehow to Truman being stationed with a man by the name of Eddie Jacobson in World War I, beginning a friendship that mattered profoundly in the 1940s. In the story we are telling today, all we know for sure is that Caligula attempted to desecrate the temple, and because of Agrippa, this did not occur. This will set the stage for the brief but incredibly complex reign of this grandson of Herod, Agrippa, who was at home in both Jerusalem and Rome. It will be a small, but I believe very interesting episode in the story of an everlasting city, a city in which acts of leadership and also seeming happenstance over the centuries bring us to the remarkable age in which we live today. This is Mayor Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.